This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. What is Islamic fundamentalism, and why are militant Islamic groups on the rise? My guest, Abdulaziz Sashidina, is an Islamic scholar who's been researching Islamic fundamentalism and conflicting Western and Islamic perspectives on human rights and religious liberty. We called him earlier today to talk about Islamic fundamentalists in the Middle East and in the United States. American law enforcement officials say that suspects in the World Trade Center bombing are connected with militant Islamic fundamentalist groups. Sashidina is a visiting professor of Islamic studies at McGill University in Montreal. He's also a professor at the University of Virginia. He grew up in Tanzania and studied in India, Iran, and Canada. I asked him why he's been studying Islamic fundamentalism.
I am more concerned to find out what exactly are Muslims searching for in the 1980s and 90s, because we had a sort of a reform movement in Islamic world, which we read about and which we know academically, that 19th and early part of 20th century, there was a lot of intellectual rethinking in the religious realm. All of a sudden, in after 70s, we find that once again, Islamic discourse is coming to the forefront. People are talking about Islam. People are talking about implementing Islamic law. Why now? Why? What is it that really prompts it at this time to respond the way they are responding? So that has been my main interest in finding out the reason that why at this time, after we thought that we had already found solutions, we had already talked about so many things in the realm of reform, in changing our ways, in introducing technicalization in our societies, why now are we talking about something that is... It seems to be almost going backwards rather than forwards.
Now, when we talk about Christian fundamentalism, one of the things that's usually referred to within that is a literal reading of the Bible. Is there a similar phenomenon in Islamic fundamentalism, a literal reading of the Quran?
No, there isn't anything of that sort, because there has always been a sort of interpretive approach to the scripture in Islam. So even when it was revealed for the first time, we do know for sure that the early Muslims read it and interpreted it and did not take it literally. But there is another form of literalism, is implementation of the past decisions. So it is not the scripture as much as the norms that are being implemented to the very literal sense of those norms. And that's where we do have some sort of comparison between the Christian fundamentalists, who are literally interpreting the Bible, whereas the Muslim fundamentalists would literally interpret, or would literally go back to the norms that were formulated, let's say, in 9th century or 10th century, almost 300 years after Islam emerged as a world religion. So there is that kind of going back and retrieving materials literally from that period.
The fundamentalists who are returning to earlier centuries' interpretations of the Quran, did you see that as a reaction against modernization?
A reaction against unsatisfactory modernization. One of the reasons why Islamic fundamentalism is really catching up is the social and political conditions that are prevalent in the Islamic world. We do read about it. There is a level of poverty about which the governments have not done much. There is social injustice, there is political injustice that is prevalent in most of the Muslim societies. So you do find that is the thrust of the reaction.
I think it's fair to say that
yes.
Islamic fundamentalism has an intolerance of pluralism, whether it's other religions or secularism. Do you find justification for that in the Quran?
Not in the Quran, but certainly in the behavior and the conduct of the Muslim fundamentalists, one does see intolerance, not only towards, I would say, the pluralism or plurality of other religions, but even within the Islamic community, you do find them to be intolerant of differences of opinion within the community. So they do go, I would characterize their understanding of Islam as, my Islam is the Islam that should be believed and should be followed.
You've described Islamic fundamentalism as a return to earlier centuries' interpretations of the Quran. Is there a contemporary Islam that tries to apply the teachings of the Quran to the modern world as we know it, without returning to the interpretations of earlier centuries?
Muslim fundamentalists have not still, in my opinion, created intellectual structures which would help them to retrieve that information and make it relevant today. That's the big problem that they face. It's an intellectual problem because they are not intellectually oriented, by the way. Many Muslim fundamentalist leaders are traditionalists in their education, and they do not really, they are not, I would say, trained in independence of thought, independence of mind, and critical evaluation of the past to the point of creating new sort of discourse that would be more relevant to the modern society, to the modern situation.
Is there a group of Islamic scholars or Islamic intellectuals who are interpreting Islam for the modern world without looking backwards?
There are quite a few, but they do not have the credibility in the eyes of the Muslims, nor in the eyes of the traditional scholars. So the establishment does not look at them as the authentic representatives of the tradition. So you have a problem that there are Muslim intellectuals who would like to go independent of the past tradition and go to the Quran, perhaps to the original text, and create a new interpreted version of Islam for the modern days. They suffer from what I call lack of credibility for the Muslims in general.
Where do you see yourself fitting in now as an Islamic scholar and somebody who is a person of the faith?
I'm afraid to say that although I work very closely with the Muslim community, especially in North American context, or in the Western context in general, I find that many times my work is obstructed by the traditional outlook that is prevalent in the Muslim communities that that still look towards the mother countries for the Islamic leadership, which is actually not delivering what it is looking for. So I might have a sort of influence on the younger Muslim generation who are growing up in this part of the world, who are part of this, I would say, North American social universe. But I do not have the same kind of influence with the older generation that still is bicultural and still looks upon the traditional world of Islam as the source of its religious values. So our work is, I face a lot of challenges, there's no doubt, and I face a lot of problems. But we are making, so to speak, some success with the Muslim community in the West, but I don't think we are taken very seriously in the Islamic world.
My guest is Abdulaziz Sashadina. He's a professor of Islamic studies at the University of Virginia, visiting professor of Islamic studies at McGill University this semester. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Islamic scholar Abdulaziz Sashadina. What was your reaction when you found out that some of the suspects in the bombing of the World Trade Center towers are believed to have ties to Islamic fundamentalist groups?
My reaction was a mixed one, because unless and until it is established that these are really the ones who are connected to, because if they are connected to, I mean to say, that the Muslim organizations or Muslim fundamentalists, it's rather premature for us on this, perhaps without proper evidence, to label them all as Muslim terrorists who are supported by the Islamic fundamentalists. So I find it rather difficult to do that. My reaction was immediately to say that it could very well be some of these individuals who have taken upon themselves to do these things, but it would be difficult to find support by any reasonable, I'm emphasizing on this term, reasonable and rational Islamic groups in the Islamic world. Because there are two kinds of Islamic fundamentalists in the Islamic world. There are those who believe in the radical activism, and there are those who believe in negotiated and in a more careful and more civilized way of dealing with the question of establishing justice. And I think that if one were to connect them with those groups that are really seeking to redress the wrongs by taking these actions, then I think there would be very little support among the Muslims themselves. And in fact, I can say that majority of the Muslims would disagree with what they are doing and the way they are doing it. There's a lot of self-criticism within the Muslim groups themselves about the way they are going about doing these things. So you have a problem of what I call a kind of, there is no united leadership. This is very interesting to note that in the Muslim fundamentalist groups, there is no united leadership. They do not recognize one united leader whose word will be taken as the final word. And therefore, it really remains to be established who is exactly behind this particular group to which this Salama is perhaps loyal to or obeying the orders of, commands of. We really need to find out who exactly is this group.
A couple of suspects in the World Trade Center tower bombings are said to have ties to Sheikh Omar Abdel Rahman, an Egyptian cleric who stood trial and was acquitted in Egypt on charges of assassinating Anwar Sadat. And he now has a mosque in Jersey City.
That's right.
And he's said to be the spiritual leader of several extremist groups. What do you know about him?
I have appeared with him in a certain in a context of the Muslim student organization having a forum every December. Some years ago, I met him and I saw him. And he's a fiery speaker, there's no doubt about it. But I think he is being indicted unnecessarily in this particular situation. Because his position, by the way, is very normal position in the Muslim culture of a religious leader. I get calls from Geneva, I get calls from Paris, I get calls from London asking me questions of moral content. What should be our reaction to the government that we know is oppressing us regarding paying our taxes to that government? Should we evade taxes? Because, you know, that is morally wrong to do it. Legal aside, you have also moral questions, the question of conscience. And we get these questions and sometimes we don't have a proper answer for it. And I'm sure Omar Abdel Rahman is one of those leaders whose presence in North American context makes it almost imperative for many Muslims around in the country to ask him questions about these events, about what should be their response. And here you are drawn into a topic that is not your area of speciality per se. For example, political Islam, which is the true nature of Islamic fundamentalism. And a group like Muhammad Salama would come, a person like Muhammad Salama would come and would ask questions about, well, I am a Palestinian, I am being wronged in my country, I have no home, I have no this. What should be my reaction to this world? And Omar Abdel Rahman would cite certain traditions of the Prophet that you cannot bear injustices, you have to stand firm against injustices, and you should demand your rights, and you should be very firm about it. Now, all these things could be construed by us to be extremist response to the given situation. I think that he's being drawn into something without proper justification, I think.
I've read, and I mean, I've only read this, I don't know how true it is, I have no firsthand knowledge of this, but I've read that his messages include calls to eradicate anyone who stands in the way of Islam.
Which will be, by the way, you will hear this commonly among the religious leaders. I have heard in Jordan, when I was during the Gulf crisis, I was in Jordan in the Friday sermon, the khatib, the man who gives the sermon, would call upon people in a very similar tone. And it is the call for jihad, for example, is such a common theme in the Islamic world that many a times you hear it and it is taken in a very different context. It is part of what I call the Islamic ideology, where you have to struggle to establish justice. And we take jihad in a very limited sense of holy war, and which is, by the way, one of the meanings of jihad is holy war. One of the meanings of jihad is to fight in the path of God. But it has also the meaning of struggling for justice to be established. And this, in the context of Jordan, if you remember this, King Hussein would be very, very much upset if he were really to hear a call to overthrow him. But that's not the message. The message is that Muslims ought to be struggling for establishing justice both at personal level, at the social level, which is a very common theme in the Islamic world.
Do you think that there needs to be people within the Islamic world who stand up and disavow these actions? And
certainly, certainly. You're absolutely right. This is where I think even the Muslim leaders are failing, that they have to really come out in open and say that we are not supporters of these things, and we are not part of this at all. I think there has to be disclaimers from the Islamic world itself. And I'm sure there has been, which are not usually reported, as we know that we don't report everything that comes out of the Islamic world.
I know as part of your studies of Islamic fundamentalism, you've been to the Middle East fairly recently.
Yes.
When were you there? Where did you go?
I have been to Jordan recently, to Saudi Arabia in December, to Pakistan in December, also to Iran in October. So I've been to many parts, different parts, in the last 12 months.
Can you tell me what you look for when you go?
All depends what I'm searching for. Many a times I'm searching for finding out if there have been any new solutions to the pressing problems of what I call Islamic modernism, Islamic reforms, Islamic epistemology. Anything new has been done, any new thinking has come forward, any new intellectuals have come forward, any women who have found a voice in the Muslim societies to raise their concerns, to discuss, to sit in dialogue about their situation. These are the things that I search for.
Have you found new thinking emerging or new women's voices emerging?
It depends. In other parts, in Jordan, it was easier to hear those voices. In Saudi Arabia, it is impossible to hear that voice because you don't have a contact. Even my wife, being with me and being able to talk to the people whenever she went to the mosque or anything, was not able to gather much information. In Pakistan, you do hear voices that are new voices. There are voices that were never heard before. But on the whole, in my own assessment, I'm not, although I'm optimistic, I'm known by my colleagues to be very optimistic, I'm not terribly optimistic at this time, seeing the situation the way it is being handled by the religious leadership in the Islamic world in general.
What would you like to see the Islamic leadership do?
To make Islamic norms relevant to the modern times. I think Islam has a lot to offer. Islam has a lot to contribute, and therefore I believe in the Muslims in this part of the world, even in North America, through their integration, have a lot to offer to the Western world and have to make their voices heard positively and not the way it is being heard through these terroristic actions, unfortunately. And there I think that Islamic leadership has to take an action in creating what I call the strategies of interaction, intellectual interaction with the West, with the whole world, rather than remaining in their own small world of what I call traditional Islamic ways of thinking.
And what do you see your own role within that as being?
I think I see myself as a bridge between the two, because I was educated both in the Islamic world, in the same institutions in which the Muslim leadership was educated, in the seminaries. And also I was educated in the universities in the West. So I combine in me both the approaches and the wealth of the information that is brought from the seminaries and the methodology that is learned in the scientific and the free thinking institutions, universities in the West. So I combine both. So I see myself as a bridge. And many a times I'm invited in the Islamic world to share my ways of my methodology, my ways of solving the problems that are pressing problems for the Muslim communities, especially problems of integration with the social universe wherever they happen to be.
Can you share with us some advice that you've given on that subject?
I usually tell them to look at rather the situation as a human situation. I always search for human norms. And I think that Islam, the Quran itself, talks about these human norms. The Quran sees the human unity. It sees different religions as particular paths leading to those norms that Quran believes are present in all human beings. And my message is always to search for those common norms which can become the source for the human dialogue, for common concerns, for common moral concerns, for common human concerns that can be shared all around the world. And the problems today are global problems. When we talk about democracy, we are not talking about democracy only in one part of the world. When we talk about social justice, we are not talking about social justice only in one part of the world. We are talking about global social justice. We are talking about global democratic situation. And therefore, I think that when I talk to my fellow Muslims, especially Muslim leaders, I am always urging them to say that, to talk in terms of human norms. I don't want them to reject West as being Western. I tell them that West has human norms to offer. There are international norms that we can talk about and we can agree upon and we can implement them in the tools to improve the human situation all around the world.
Abdulaziz Sashadina is a professor of Islamic studies at McGill University and the University of Virginia. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.